Good morning. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Here's Thane Maynard talking with Dr. Ian Sterling from the University of Alberta about his work with Environment Canada and efforts to save the shrinking ecosystems of polar bears.
Hi, Dr. Ian Sterling. Good to talk to you.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Your book on polar bears is really remarkable, both an overview and an update of sort of where that endangered species is. And I know you've had a fascinating and what must be a daunting career with all the changes you're seeing in the Arctic.
I've been one of the luckiest people in the whole world, I think, in that I got to do what I most wanted to do for my whole life, and that was basically to study polar marine mammals, polar bears, and some of the seals, walruses, and whatever in the polar regions for 45 years and counting.
And that's remarkable, but it's during those 45 years that we, thanks to you and others, have learned about the changes going on. And I know for some reason there seems to be always a quote-unquote political debate about climate change, but climate change is very real, and over 45 years you've seen it in action.
Well, in my mind, there actually is no debate. The debate is over. You have debates about ideas while you're evaluating hypotheses and you're looking at things, but the evidence for climate warming, global climate warming, and its effects in the Arctic are simply unequivocal. So it's a case of deciding what we're going to do, how we can respond to things like that. There is no debate about whether climate change is happening.
Bring us a little bit up to speed on how that is affecting polar bears. I know you've studied many things, but polar bears get a lot of the headlines, and of course, the prompted me to call you with your terrific book on the species.
No problem. People focus on polar bears because they're obviously attractive and interesting animals, and I put in a little bit of a plug for the science here, because the only reason that we can really say some of these things for sure about polar bears and the effect of changing ice conditions is because we have long data sets and studies in particular areas. You have to kind of know what's happening, quotation marks, before you can really assess the extent to which things are happening afterwards. And what we've found, just a couple of little things that we found in Western Hudson Bay, for example, which is the best studied polar bear population in the world, is that the climate is warming and the ice is breaking up earlier. It's now breaking up an average of 3 weeks or more earlier than it did only 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which is a remarkably fast change for that sort of thing to happen in a time as short as a one person's working lifetime is incredible. The result of that earlier breakup means that the bears are getting progressively shorter periods of time to feed at the best and most important time of the year, and that's when all the young ring seal pups are born,
mm-hmm.
get fat, and they're weaned at the age of about 6 weeks. They're about 50% fat, and they're not very smart about predators. So the bears are coming ashore lighter and lighter. They're surviving less well. The cubs are surviving less well. So it's really quite clear how significant those changes are, and that in some populations we're getting to the point where serious things are happening. As other populations, there are about 19 populations in the world. Some of them are doing just fine still, and there's some, like the ones in Russia, that where we can see from the satellite that the effects on the ice are huge, but we really don't have enough population on the ground studies to be able to evaluate it.
You know, when you mentioned that one of the favorite meals of a polar bear is a ringed seal, it might be hard for most listeners to imagine what an adaptation it is to even eat an animal so high in fat and high in protein. So it's not easily replaced if they are, as I know in Alaska now, documented as raiding birds' eggs. I mean, there aren't enough birds' eggs around to fill that.
Well, that's exactly right. And we see the same sort of thing in Hudson Bay, where they're eating goose eggs, or they go ashore, they eat berries, blueberries they seem to particularly like, and so on. But in terms of the total nutrition, it isn't. It's just like having an hors d'oeuvre or a little party snack. It's not what's going to keep them going. We did some calculations, some rough estimations that on average, of course, big bears more, little bears less. And on average, a bear is going to require something like 40 to 43 or 45 ring seal, average-sized ring seals, or the equivalent, like a big bearded seal might be three or four ring seals, but 40 to 45 seals per bear per year. Now that if you got 1,000 bears out there in a population, that means they're going to need 45,000 seals a year. Now seal population's got to be pretty big to be able to support that. You just don't get that sort of nutrition level from birds' eggs or berries.
That's true. So explain a little bit about why the ice is important to being able to catch seals as well as to be able to have their young.
They need the ice to be able to hunt. It's their platform. It gives them the access to the marine environment. They can't just swim around out in the ocean like a killer whale and catch seals. There are records of the occasional bear catching the occasional seal that way, but they're very uncommon and certainly not nearly enough to support a population. So the critical thing for the polar bear to survive is the presence of ice at the time when the greatest numbers of seals are available, and that's in the springtime. Now, they don't need the ice to give birth to their young. Most polar bears give birth to dens to their young in snow dens dug on land, which the females come ashore for. And the females are the only ones that actually go into dens in the winter. All the bears of all the other age and sex classes continue to hunt all winter.
This is intriguing to me because I'm thinking of you with your long history, 45 years of doing research in the Arctic. I know it's impossible to predict, but what do you think it will look like 45 years from now?
Well, I guess that there's a question. It's like a Y junction. If we if we continue business as it is and we don't do anything about climate warming, then what we're going to see in the certainly in the period of 45 years or so is that polar bears will probably be pretty much gone from half to two-thirds of their range at least, because there just won't be enough ice in places like Hudson Bay or the Alaskan coast or the coast of Russia. The remaining population, remaining bears will be living in residual ice areas, probably in the most northernmost areas of the Canadian Arctic Islands and northern Greenland. On the other hand, if we are able to keep climate warming, reduce it to and keep bring it under control to that we rise no more than a degree and a half, say, or two at the very outside. There's some debate about what the exact number is, but the point is if we can keep it muzzled and then possibly even bring it down again, then we have hope of retaining some of what we see in the Arctic. And I'd just like to say that although, of course, we focus and we think a lot about polar bears are just one of the most interesting, but they're only one part of a very large ecosystem that involves all kinds of other species. It has been the basis of traditional life for many Inuit, or you call them Eskimo, groups in different parts of the Arctic culturally. So it's just a huge change in many, many areas, which we are able to use what's happening in polar bears simply as an illustration of what's coming and is going to affect a much wider range of things.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the Y junction, what do you think are the key steps here in this decade to turn some of this around so we are able to hold down our impact and hold down that temperature?
Well, all of the individual things that you and I and whatever can do about driving less or walking more and turning off light switches and all that sort of thing, those are all very important. But well over two-thirds of the sources that are coming are from the using of fossil fuels, either oil and gas or coal. And what we really need to happen, and the only way that this will happen, in my view, is that if all the nations in the world come together, as I kind of hoped they were going to start doing in Copenhagen, but they didn't, come together and say, okay, we're going to, as a world, face this global problem, and we're going to address it together. Because unless everybody acts, and in particular all the big actors, then no matter how much the small and very dedicated persons and countries or groups may be, they're not going to be effective without the big guys.
Dr. Ian Sterling, thanks for spending a few minutes with us. And please, if you're coming through Cincinnati, come see our polar bears at the Cincinnati Zoo.
I will. I've heard a lot about your zoo, and I've heard a lot about the good work that you're doing in terms of information on climate warming. And I know you work with Polar Bears International, which I personally think is the one of the most important groups out there talking about bears and climate change and things we ought to be thinking about in the Arctic. So thanks very much for calling.
My guest has been Dr. Ian Sterling, author of the new book, Polar Bears. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.